This is Due By Friday, the weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, sous vide your shoes.
Hello?
I'm sorry I'm late, Merlin.
Oh, it's okay. I'm sorry I'm late.
I was actually late. I needed my Diet Coke.
It's actually Alex's fault this week.
It actually is.
It's always my fault. I'm really sorry, you guys.
Oh, man. It's such a big week, you guys.
We have a lot to talk about.
I'm also really excited for people to complain about my voice again.
What's wrong with your voice? What are you talking about?
It's the clicking.
No. I'm just nasally.
Did you fix the crackle?
I have a theory
about the crackle, which is I noticed that as soon as Alex, so I was early to the studio this week and Alex was late, as we've covered. We've previously established that. But I watched Alex plug everything in, and the minute that she plugged in the USB-C adapter, the official Apple USB-C to, you know, sort of like the sort of wide boy, the fat boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The fat man.
Yeah.
The little, you have your the little
curvy,
boy and
the curvy,
fat man.
I love my curvy adapter.
I love my I love my big bold beautiful curvy adapter. As soon as she plugged the fat man into her computer, the clicking started.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And you know, as we know, remember that blog post from Cable when he was looking at Apple's like dongles and adapters, and he discovered there's a whole little computer in there?
Right. Well, there's probably like a $30 adapter or $60 adapter if you want the 29-watt decrackler. You got to get that in the grove. You have to go into the grove and get the full experience.
The first week that like the office switched over to these wonderful MacBook Pros that nobody has a problem with, let's say one of my bosses got a bunch of Anker, just basic USB-A to USB-C adapters.
Hey, those things are great.
And then I was like, why are all of my USB cables suddenly completely broken? So I Anker fixed the problem eventually, but like the first week they were out, not great.
What was the problem?
Not good. They just dented them and like twisted them. There's just a manufacturing issue. So I was let down. I like Anker.
I got a new Anker coming today.
Do we want to go down the Apple rabbit hole?
Follow-up. NBC Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was on the verge of resigning this past summer amid mounting policy disputes and clashes with the White House, according to multiple senior administration officials who were aware of the situation at the time. The tensions came to a head around the time that President Donald Trump delivered a politicized speech in late July to the Boy Scouts of America, an organization Tillerson once led, the official said. Just days earlier, Tillerson had openly disparaged the president, referring to him as a, quote, moron, after a July 20th meeting at the Pentagon with members of Trump's national security team and cabinet officials, according to three officials familiar with the incident. You know, this is what's great about Rex Tillerson. This is why you know that he's in the right job as Secretary of State, is the man is such a master statesman, so skilled in the arts of diplomacy that he, A, calls the president a moron, and then, B, three sources leak it.
And where's the confirmation?
We're going to have the best people. Let me tell you, Merlin, we're going to drain the swamp. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the best people in there.
Supposedly, I cannot verify this independently on my own. I haven't had the opportunity. I'm on the floor, show floor here, as you know. Supposedly, the actual quote was that he's a fucking moron. But he's not going to address that petty stuff. Too soon.
This is a bad week. It was bad right from the start.
Yep.
Oh, God.
I don't feel very funny.
No.
Which part was bad? Oh, the shooting.
Well,
Tom Petty?
Yeah. Tom Petty.
See, I wasn't going to bring that up because I couldn't stand the idea that you were going to do that thing you do where you just hate on something because it's popular.
No. Who hates Tom Petty?
Nobody
hates Tom Petty. I went and listened. I watched a lot of Tom Petty YouTube videos this
week.
Me too. And you know what? One of the weird things I realized about Tom Petty is he's so icon. How do I put it? He is the sound of rock and roll. He was so ubiquitous in my childhood. It's hard for me to separate like his particular voice and his particular sound from just music.
Mm-hmm. I'm cribbing this a little bit from a slight culture gabfest I just listened to. But you know, when you talk about Tom Petty, it's like, how many artists are there where like, I mean, is there anybody who doesn't love at least one Tom Petty song? Like where like you it's one of your favorite songs probably. It's just, and you know, and he stood astride these different genres, but like, and he was kind of a weirdo. He looked like a wraith and the Watcher. And like, he was like a Watu the Wraith, like out there, like just looking down on, I don't know, just normal people and telling little stories. And what do you say? I mean, it's weird because my Tom Petty is an old Tom Petty. And I think most people's Tom Petty is Full Moon Fever Tom Petty, which is a really good record. But to me, like the Refugee era is my up through like Hard Promises is my Tom Petty.
Oh man, that video for I went and watched. Did you watch the music video for Refugee this week?
I didn't watch that one. I was watching the old live Old Grey Whistle Test from 1981 and then stuff from not Dan the Torpedoes, from Hard Promises, I think.
That Refugee music video is very cool. And his voice is cool and his guitar tone is cool. It just sounds like rock and roll. It's like hard to imagine music without Tom
Petty.
And
the thing is, the band was so fucking good. I mean, everybody, you know, throws, understandably, puts a lot of accolades on Ben Montench and Mike Campbell. But like the bass parts on those songs are bananas. You go back and listen to The Waiting. The bass part on The Waiting, the bass part drives American Girl. It's most of the melody on American Girl in a way that like later like hardcore bands like Husker Du type bands would do, where the guitar is doing something fairly repetitive. This is really boring. I'm sorry. Nobody likes music.
No, it's not.
But go and watch that live performance. Look for I'm gonna say Tom Petty, American Girl OGWT, and it's really good.
This sounds super fucked up, but as soon as I knew that this happened, I kind of went on full media blackout of Tom Petty's death because I wanted Merlin's suggestions on like where to go and where to start.
I would love that.
The Beatles.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, okay. So the link I just sent you is a pretty good snapshot of the ascendant Tom Petty. He's doing a song from his first record, which is from the mid '70s. This is in the later '70s, but you get a feel for that. Let's see, The Waiting. He had a whole dust up with his record label. There's a really good 4-hour documentary you can watch about it.
Is this the Netflix one? I've heard that. I've heard a number of people recommend the Netflix documentary.
There's a couple. There's one Peter Bogdanovich did that's real long. So he had this big dust up with his company. The story supposedly goes that he was adamant about, I don't know if this is accurate, but supposedly he had this very specific idea of like he didn't want to charge more than this amount for an album. And he ended up having this huge dust up with his label. He had kind of a Springsteen where he couldn't record for a while. And then he had Hard Promises in 1981 where he's seen walking through a record store. And that's really good. That's got The Waiting, which is my favorite Tom Petty song. But, you know, and then honestly,
whose favorite Tom Petty song isn't Won't Back Down?
You know, that's good. I like that song. But it's achieved the Mona Lisa status in some ways where it's so like, wow. You just like hear it, and you're like, yeah, okay, it's that song again. But you're banga danga danga dang 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 dang, and then boom, doom, 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 doom. Watch that video. Let's all watch a Tom Petty video together. Those are all good. I mean, Traveling Wilburys, you know, it's kind of fun, silly stuff. But like, you know, he continued to find new and interesting ways to reinvent himself. He developed this through Traveling Wilburys. Developed that relationship with Jeff Lynne from ELO, which gave him that very distinctive ELO kind of sound on his 90s stuff. But like, yeah, I mean, he's great. He's a baller. And he smoked like a chimney. You know, you got to respect that.
You're watching that Vietnam War documentary, the Ken Burns film, right?
Jesus Christ. I don't know why I keep watching this. I don't know why I keep thinking, oh, this one, things will get better. I got to the My Lai Massacre last night.
Oh, boy.
God.
Man, I binged it. It's the first like bingeable Ken Burns film. I watched all 16 hours in like a weekend. It captivated me. You know, I've always been fascinated by Vietnam as a country and the history of Vietnam, and I've always been fascinated by the Vietnam War. It's like a unique window into the like absolute like moral failing of America and a sort of American mythology. And this movie just got me going again. Like I kind of forgot about it's crazy. Like I forgot about how much I love the Iraq War or the Vietnam War and how much I feel like it drives like even all of the politics of today and how evil and over the top it was.
We're talking in the little text channel about this, but you know, you had some interesting criticisms of, well, basically, long story short, the first episode for me, I did not know the history. I mean, I knew that Vietnam had a lot of troubles and been kind of a colony of France and it wasn't super nice, but I had no idea what those folks had been through. And it's a really interesting way to start framing that storytelling. The first episode, I think, is very, very good for just about anybody to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you only ever want to dip your toes into this, or you're not even interested, just go watch the first episode of the Vietnam War documentary, because it doesn't actually deal with the American War. It deals with Ho Chi Minh and the French occupation, the Japanese occupation, and the Vietnam Revolutionary War against the successful wars against the French and the Japanese. But pretty remarkable history. Like, I've traveled extensively through Vietnam and studied abroad there, and I've been to a lot of these locations.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You've had many lives, Max.
Yeah. And I mean, it has among other things, it's in my opinion the best food in the world, because you have like Asian ingredients, but French culinary technique, because they were occupied by the French, so they have like written recipes and baguette and bread and things like that. But yeah, love it, fascinated by it. And then Merlin, you recommended. Now I'm sort of I've done the thing where I've consumed the Vietnam documentary. I've almost completed watching it twice, and now I'm eating all the crumbs. Like, do you ever do that with a band or something? Where listen to the albums, and now I got to find like the B sides and the like, you know, live recordings.
Well, and it happens that there's another very good media product that's recently come out that's a perfect companion to this.
So I'm going through. So you recommended this. It's a podcast from I think it's from PRI, and it's called LBJ's War, and it's so good. It's a better, in my opinion, a better political treatment of the war than the Ken Burns documentary provides.
Well, you know, I guess what I don't know. I don't know who knows what, but you know, Richard Nixon was not the first president to tape the Oval Office. LBJ taped a lot of his phone calls. And so you've got this first-person document of McGeorge Bundy.
Hey, Google, do yourself a favor, everyone. Google LBJ orders pants.
Pants. He pulls up into his ball sack. There's a wonderful call with LBJ calling the, I believe, president of Hagar Pants, and talking about how he very specifically wants his crotch area dealt with in some custom pants. He wants long pockets for his keys and his pocket knife.
I know this because of the wonderful Lewis Carr documentaries, biographies of LBJ, the best biographies ever written, a three-part series about LBJ that if you have any passing interest in American politics, like, these books are a must-read. They're very fun and very good. But LBJ had a huge hog, and he would take it out in front of people all the time when he was just trying to intimidate them or you know, sort of like get their gander. Right. He'd just take his hog out, and he would also like call reporters into the bathroom while he was like taking a shit.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, he's a famous, very tall guy. There's a very famous photo of him, basically, like, you know, how he would intimidate people when he was a Texas congressman, I believe. Was he a congressman or a senator? I forget. But he's a very famous whip. Like, he was really good at getting the votes. And let's be honest, nothing's going to be more intimidating than knowing that the man shitting in the stall next to you has a giant hog. That's the kind of thing where you're going to flip your vote. This is a very good series, and like I say, you can feel like I was saying to you when we were texting, like, you can feel him struggling with himself and with this decision that he feels he can't back out of, and then he's being egged on by Bundy and McNamara and all these other bellicose figures who are like saying, "Oh no, this is going to be just the thing. We've had these terrible losses, but boy, this is really Ted is going fine. Ted is fine. Don't worry, it's no big deal. We'll be all right." Decisive victory for us.
it's the particular madness, and man, there's so much I want to talk about here. It's the particular madness of Vietnam that, you know, that by episode one of the Ken Burns documentary sets up so clearly that it's an anti-colonial conflict, and the Vietnamese people just want their goddamn peace and independence. And, you know, to some degree, Ho Chi Minh has been radicalized by the Chinese and by Marxism, and he's very taken with sort of Leninist anti-colonial writing. And he's like, enough is enough. And people fly. And he starts an army, and people flock to his army. And you have to understand, like, these people are willing to lay down their lives as martyrs for their country, and they can lose 100 people, and they'll keep fighting. In America, every single soldier is a tragedy. Like, it's so obvious that we were going to lose that war, that there was nothing to gain, you know, and the documentary, it sets that conflict up so well and kind of touches on it. But then by episode three or four, you're like, the U.S. had to fight the communists. We had to support the independent democracy in South Vietnam, which was this like shambling facade of a zombie government that we cooed repeatedly.
And there was no government there. But also the fact that when you think of these Stalinist dictatorial characters, you think of these, you know, these regimes, you think you tend to think of them as being very brutal to their people. You think of them as being very insular. And I don't get that vibe at all. The note that really killed me was the thing about how Ho Chi Minh was like reaching out to Americans. He's quoting Thomas Jefferson. He's trying to get letters to Harry Truman that are not being delivered to Harry Truman. And it's such a heartbreaker. Bad timing. But it's such a heartbreaker to like know that this guy was out there like trying to do the right thing and trying to appeal to America to exercise American values. He was not just some rogue state with missiles. Quite the opposite. It was a very poor country that was trying to break off the chains of this imperialism that they'd suffered under.
Can I do my little serious political rant that we're going to edit out for the week?
Yeah, and absolutely. Then we'll come back
and talk more. I actually have a thing to talk about music, which is why I brought this up. But first, my serious political point. So I think this week the thing that's most depressing to me is this is like a theme of like watching all the Vietnam stuff, watching the mass shooting, and then I also got embroiled a little bit in this argument with. I don't know if you've seen like Jack and Biz and some of the Twitter people are sort of digging in on what they're going to do with Trump and Twitter and all of this. And it's like one of my perennial frustrations in politics is like sometimes political problems require a lot of nuance on both sides. And it's a morally very difficult thing to figure out what to do. And there's unintended consequences and it's complicated and confusing. But sometimes it's not. Not every issue in politics is like that. Sometimes an issue in politics is extremely simple, and there's like an obvious common sense solution right in front of us. But for like a variety of social or political reasons, we like can't do the obvious solution, so we rule it out, right? Mm-hmm. So let's take like guns are a great example, right? If you take away the extremely simple and obvious solution of get rid of guns, do a massive buyback. Do what Australia did, right? Do a massive buyback program, mm-hmm. make them illegal. Like it's hanging right in front of us. Like we know that we could do that and then gun violence would plummet. But it's only if you take that off the table. If you're like, well, I'm not going to consider the very obvious solution in front of me, that then gun violence becomes this intractable morass of like, there's no cause. Is it mental illness? And it's like a lot of it is suicide and we don't know what to do. And it's like, well, yeah, because you took away the obvious answer. It's like I'm so tired of in this whole gun. First of all, I hate the gun argument on Twitter. It's so bad. Even on the people who agree with me, I fucking hate that everyone has to chime in and be like, I hate guns, like on every fucking text thread and Slack and tweet thread that there is. Like I know you, I don't tell me, go do something, call your congressman, or I don't know, do go do anything other than say that you hate guns. Like I'm just tired of the what about me-ism of that. Yeah. But so that's what bothers me on the left. But then it's like, well, it's like on the right you have this like, why people like overcomplicate it so much. They're like well, I'm so tired of hearing these like complicated reasons why we can't get rid of guns. Like, well, if we get rid of guns, people will still get them and the murder rate will actually go up. And it's like, what are you, fucking idiot? Like, of course, if there's fewer guns, there'll be fewer gun deaths. How? It's just simple math. It's like, it's like that people's ability to do like mental gymnastics to justify almost anything with like by introducing needless complexity to it is astounding to me. And it's the same argument with Trump on Twitter, right? Where I get so fed up with it when he was tweeting at North Korea and starting a war. I was like, just kick him off the platform. I know that he can still start a war, but it doesn't have to be on, if you own Twitter, the war doesn't have to be on your website, right? Like, at least just say like, well, it doesn't have to be here.
It's that kind of all or nothing approach to something that is such a dead end in so many parts of life, but very much especially in politics. Where like, if you had a chainsaw on a rope in your living room swinging around and almost killing your kids every day, mm-hmm. you say, well, no, we have to respect the chainsaw. It's about heritage.
Well, the chainsaw's always been here.
You're saying, I think that you hear those arguments of like, oh, well, the classic bumper sticker, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Well, okay, that's a start.
How do you make a case
for having 23 rifles, some of which have been retrofitted to turn into automatic weapons?
It's the price of freedom. What freedom? The freedom to have the guns, which is that's its own
tautology. It's
circular,
a tautology.
Yeah. What do you mean it's the price of freedom? It's not the price. Other countries are free, more free than us, and they don't have guns.
It's a non sequitur. It really is a non sequitur.
Anyway, I'm haunted by this logic of like this idea of like, well, it's like I'm willing to introduce almost impossible levels of justification and complexity to justify the sort of patently evil thing that I want to do, or the very obvious remedy would be to just not do it when I'm watching the Vietnam documentary. Because that's exactly what they did, is they were just like, well, we're going to send hundreds of thousands of Marines and soldiers into Vietnam to go crawling through these swamps and lay down their lives to take these hills that we don't even want and we're not even going to keep, just to say that we took them. Because, and then we have back home all these geniuses at the Rand Corporation making spreadsheets proving that we're going to win the war with some sort of equation. And it's like, well, you've now engineered the most complicated, like, in defiance of all common sense and what your every basic instinct in your own eyes can tell you, you've created this mythology of the numbers that tell, you know, or the complex logic or the equation or the algorithm that tells you that you're getting the result that you want in like plain defiance of the facts. And if you wonder, like, how did America go insane and do this war, or how did we do the Iraq war, or how do we get to this? You look back at history and you're like, how did it get to this point? Well, this is it. You see it. Go on Twitter. You see it right in front of you. And it's not, it's like people you know, right? It's like regular smart people. They're able to go to unbelievable lengths to like overcomplicate these simple moral truths.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really like the soundtrack for the Vietnam documentary. Have you guys listened to the soundtrack?
I have, actually. I'm surprised there's music that's so good in a Ken Burns documentary.
It's very good. There's two soundtracks. So you've got your 60s music soundtrack, which is excellent.
Hold on, wait. Asterisk, people will tweet at me other than the jazz documentary.
And then you have another one, which is the Trent Reznor sort of original score, which is also really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't ever need to hear another CCR song.
You know, like, you know, like, Vietnam, you know, like CCR?
Ever. I love CCR. I'm just trying to, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate son. You know what? It's like gun violence. Let's just resist the urge to put fortunate son in everything. Just stop. Let's have a break from CCR. We love CCR. Let's take a break. Let's not put that in our Forrest Gumps anymore. Let's just leave it. Just take a little break.
Dude, it's like the helicopter rotors. It's just like, that's the sound of Vietnam. Bow-now, bow-now.
Bow-now. They should let us run things.
I love in the documentary that it gets more like it starts off with like Pete Seeger and, you know, Bob Dylan and sort of like a lot of like you know, folk music, and as the film goes on, it gets like a little like harder, like more like
more
Led
hairy.
Zeppelin. Like the music direction is brilliant. It's really smart, really brilliant.
Yeah, you know, a nice way to wind down right before bed is to be reminded of how Kent State went.
God,
down.
Oh my God.
That's a nice
God.
Feeling. That's you a nice that, feeling well, to go to
a
bed,
A lot of
too.
That Kent State footage, it was never shown before this documentary. So it was a student filmed it and was so disturbed that he, like, changed his major and stopped making films and put the tapes in his basement. And they found it for the first time. The other thing was the execution of the North Vietnamese soldier. Yeah. That had only ever been shown in video one time ever live on the news, and never again.
Seeing it in video rather than a still is a trip, because you see what it isn't. It looks like a formal sort of extrajudicial. Execution, because the guy's got his arm extended. It looks like this very official thing. No, the guy just walks by. I think he's maybe smoking a butt. He walks by, he takes out his pistol, shoots the guy in the head, and keeps walking. It's so pop. It's so fucked up to see the actual video of it. Oh, God.
Ken Burns, great filmmaker again. Yeah.
Well, everybody, hey, it's October now, which means only one thing. It's Semen Week here on Dubai Friday.
Happy Jizzween! Right.
We've prepared a selection of Jizzween stories, of hilarious jizz stories, to share with our audience.
It's an October semen explosion. Enough semen to fill an ocean. A semen in the trees, semen in the air. Everywhere you look, there's semen there. That's because it's jizzing, jizzing, jizzing week. The new holiday you didn't know you needed. So much jizz in the news of the jizz. And your pockets filling up your shoes. jizz in your coffee? Have you checked? Cause the jizz is showing up where you least expect it. Jizz, oh, jizz, oh, we.
Digga, 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 digga. Dateline, Washington. sorry. Should I go?
Wait, Merlin. You know that helicopter noise you made a few minutes ago? Could you just make that again?
Bow now. Bow now.
Digga, digga, digga. Dateline, Washington Post. We go to Southern California. Semen contaminated flutes might have been given to children. California school officials warn. Several school districts in Southern California warned parents this weekend that flutes and recorders given to children through a nonprofit music program may have been contaminated with bodily fluids. At least one district specified that those fluids could have been semen.
I have a lot of questions about this right off the bat.
So many questions.
Number one, how did they
this
figure
guy,
it
he's like the Pied Piper of jizz.
Did one of the kids,
yeah,
did, was one of
the
kids playing the recorder and was like, hang on a minute, this tastes like semen?
Yeah, how old were these kids that they know the taste?
Me thinks I taste some jizz in this recorder.
Well, it's this traveling Pied Piper music character who comes in. This is quoting here from these. The performer distributes a flute-like musical instrument made of PVC pipe or bamboo to students during a music lesson, and the allegation is that he contaminated some of these instruments with semen. He came in the flutes. Saugus Union Superintendent Joan Lucid said in an email to parents on Saturday, "These allegations are deeply concerning, and I realize they raise many questions." Well put, Ms. Lucid.
they do indeed raise many questions. Here's the thing: if you're coming in the flutes, the children's flutes, it must be the greatest. It must make you feel like God. Like, it must be the greatest feeling in the world. It's very high risk. It's a very high risk attack.
Should I come in one recorder? Should I just come in one recorder, or should I come across many flutes?
Well, I would imagine that if that's your thing, it's like 30 times better if you have 30 students all lined up playing the old gray goose on their recorder, and you know that your jizz is in the flutes. But
every time I hear hot cross buns, I can.
but here's. Here's the thing, Merlin. As you know, I'm a utilitarian, right? I'm an economic
What's
utilitarian.
What's best for everybody?
And I think that here's the good thing about capitalism and our criminal justice system and our whole society really is that it's set up to distribute utility in the most equitable way. And here's my question: let's say that here's what it comes down to: how much do the kids really mind that there's a little bit of jizz in their flutes, right? Because did they really even notice?
Well, they still
versus how much does the guy? How much does he need it to get off?
Nope.
Because if he's getting 100 points of utility, well, let's just say he's getting 100 points of utility per child.
He gets a +5 flute. Each flute is decorated by hand, has a photo tied onto it, and inside is placed a personal handwritten note by the flute giver to their unknown flute friend in another part of the world, the website stated. They decorate a pair of flutes with symbols of peace, unity, and healing. They learn to play music from diverse cultures through listening and watching, the oldest way we learn music and language in the world still today.
Now, do you think the note, if you wrote that note and that was your fetish, you think that he, so to speak, that he rubbed it in?
100%.
Mm. Where he's like, I really hope you enjoy this special treat.
Yeah.
Mm, he affixed
that
his mark.
Prepared for your young mouths.
Nope.
Oh, nothing I love more than the sweet sound of music coming from the lips of children.
Give you a little tootle. They had music missions in Haiti, Philippines, Honduras, as well as they sent flute ambassadors. They sent flute ambassadors to Nepal, Africa, and Southeast Asia.
I really hope that the gift of music sticks.
No,
so to speak.
No.
You're coming into your own as a young musician.
No. All right, Dig Dug, this reminded me of a story from my childhood.
Yay!
There was like this urban legend from in middle school about a young man who came into he just jizzed into a bottle of French dressing.
Hot. Alonzi.
Castro, and this was at Wheaton North, which was the public high school in my neighborhood. And the kid, Castro, pleaded guilty to misdemeanor disorderly conduct in connection with the December 6th incident. And this is in 2014. He admitted taking a bottle of ranch dressing from the school cafeteria to the bathroom and ejaculating into it, and then returning to the cafeteria where juniors and seniors eat lunch. First of all, I don't know if he was like a freshman. Like, good on him if that's the case. Students reported Castro, and the senior was expelled from Wheaton North. There were no reported cases of illness following the incident. Castro told the police he thought of the prank after watching a movie filled with crude stunts. I have no explanation for what I did, Castro said in court. I felt bad after I did it. Harry Smith, Castro's attorney, noted that the teen had already been punished, including missing the end of his senior year and humiliating himself and his family. It has not been without consequences, Smith said.
Yeah, that's a shame. He's going to be tarred with that forever
now. Oh, poor kid. Poor kid.
Well, you know, the thing is, Alex, I think what a lot of people don't understand, when you hear that somebody came in your salad dressing, you're thinking, well, that's not wholesome.
Mm.
Like, who would cook with semen? Digga, digga, digga. Amazon. We go to Natural Harvest, a collection of semen-based recipes. Semen is not only nutritious, it also has a wonderful texture and amazing cooking properties. Like fine wine and cheeses, the taste of semen is complex and dynamic. Semen is inexpensive to produce and is commonly available in many, if not most, homes and restaurants. Despite all of these positive qualities, semen remains neglected as a food. This book hopes to change that. Once you overcome any initial hesitation, you'll be surprised to learn how wonderful semen is in the kitchen. Semen is an exciting ingredient that can give every dish you make an interesting twist. If you're a passionate cook and are not afraid to experiment with new ingredients, you'll love this cookbook, frequently bought together. Natural Harvest, a collection of semen-based recipes. Semenology, a book about drinking semen. And a book featuring a man with an ice axe naked, says images you should not masturbate to.
Oh, good. Great. All right.
Includes an image of what you look like holding the book against your chest, which is handy.
Oh,
Natural Harvest. And the cover is a flan. Mm-hmm. It's a cum flan.
That God.
In the Spanish style.
Oh God, it's on Kindle Unlimited. Did you happen to get this book? And like, my question is like, how much do you need? Like this has to be a lot.
I bet it's like cilantro. There's some people who won't like it, but then a lot of people with just a little bit could really change the dish. Max, have you ever cooked with jizz?
Oh, who doesn't cook with jizz?
I can think of
one
person.
Well, it's not only nutritious, it also has a wonderful texture.
You've got your blue cheese jizz.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your ranch jizz. Mm-hmm. Sour cream and onion jizz.
And if you've had a lovely candlelit dinner for friends, you got six people there, and then at the end you're serving coffee and you say, just to let you know, I used a rather unusual ingredient in all of the dishes tonight.
God.
My fortunate son.
Oh.
I would rather eat human flesh. I would rather be like a
really
fancy human.
Really?
Well, yeah. You've cooked out all of the AIDS.
I'm not like excited to like guzzle jizz, but it doesn't it doesn't gross me out that much. I don't know. It's like
I'm pretty grossed out by it.
You ever seen it, Max? It's kind of viscous.
Oh, I've seen some jizz in my day.
I've seen it in pictures. Yeah.
Well, on the internet, I mean, it's hard to avoid.
Yeah.
I'm a music teacher.
Dugga. CBS News.
Hold on. I want both of you to Google Halloween font and tell me what you see.
F A. What? How do you spell font?
F-O-N-T. Like the font. Like a typeface.
Oh, Halloween.
Halloween typeface.
Font.
Sorry.
I thought you said font. I thought it was a fancy
French word. I see a bunch of fun, spooky fonts that are just sort of dripping with some sort of viscous liquid.
Yeah, it's sort of totally
oozing.
Wholesome. It looks like somebody started with a pretty standard, not very interesting typeface, and then it got a little
moist. I understand it's supposed to be blood, and I may have seen jizz on the internet. Like,
this one is just a normal sans serif, and
this
then you
is
put
not
you,
blood.
You, you, yeah. you put your you put you you get the children play their flutes, and then all of a sudden
it.
It's.
It's a little
dripping with
like
some sort of
some of these. It looks like somebody
sticky liquid.
Somebody add a little bit of fortunate son to Harry Potter. Is what some of these look like.
Okay.
I'm sure they have a spell to remove the jizz.
Jizz
removo.
The common rooms will get so gross. They got those four poster beds and that nice.
Wait, actually, did you ever look
for sure? You have like there's a Ravenclaw fuck room.
Did you ever look up Expecto Patronum on an Urban Dictionary?
What now?
Nothing.
Okay.
Just go look up Expecto Patronum on the internet. Oh, God. There's so much semen on Snopes.
Oh. I mean, is Snopes fake news now?
I don't know. I think they're struggling. Alex, you spent a little time on Snopes looking at semen. Mm-hmm. Did you find some? I found most of them were false. Did you find many that were true?
I believe Rockstar Pump's stomach rumor. Oh, no, it's false. Never mind.
That's from my childhood. That was supposedly Rod Stewart.
One of my favorite stories from Snopes. Most of the semen ones are false. But there was this thing going around that people thought that Arizona iced tea had pee and semen in it for some reason.
Really?
And there's
that's
just
not true.
There's just a Facebook post.
Well, I'm gonna stop buying it then.
I
Jesus.
Know. Go with Arnold Palmer. And someone just says on Facebook, are the rumors about your human urine in your drinks to the Arizona iced tea Facebook group, which exists? And Arizona iced tea responds, hey, Molly, we can assure you that those rumors are 100% false, but they don't provide any evidence.
Oh, that's typical. They always used to say, when I was a kid, they used to say when you get a can of pop, you should wipe the lid off, like clean off the top of the can, because truck drivers would pee all over the cans in the back of the truck. And that was a very conventional piece. That was conventional. To this day, you see people who clean off the top of a can. That's because we were all told that they were peeing all over the cans.
I mean, it's sterile, though. That's better than having anthrax in your Halloween candy.
I'm going to get a little bit Max Temkin on this one, which is like, let's apply a little bit of Occam's razor. If you were a truck driver and needed to urinate, it would take extra effort to get in the back of the truck and pee on it. Why wouldn't you just pee into a jar or just pee right on the road?
Oh, or
maybe because you wanted to put your fortunate son under the beverages.
Sell it to the flute guy.
Is it true that Lady Gaga's new perfume is created from human blood, semen, and poison? I read it on the internet this
Anytime
morning.
That you see on the internet that something is actually created out of semen, it's 100% true. That's a common thing that a lot of luxury brands and common items, they have they're loaded with semen.
Yeah, if you've ever enjoyed a Fondy bag or a Tom Ford vest, that's just pure jizz. That's jizz all the way down. Semen in Starbucks coffee, true or false? Oh, Red Bull, buddy. Oh, Red Bull.
I retract my earlier statement. I don't think that anyone has tried Red Bull with bull semen, and how we don't know if it works better. I'd try that.
You ever heard the thing about drinking your pee in the morning?
No. Please enlighten us.
Drinking urine.
Oh, morning. Please talk about this. I have heard that people do this, and I can't tell if it's a joke or not.
I can't either. It sounds like, I don't know, spoilers, but it's kind of a snipe hunting, cow tipping type situation where, like, it's one of those things where, like, I think enough people talked about it that, it's an unorthodox Chinese medical cure. Oh, we're going to go to a site called Chinese Insider. It's a little bit ping pong. Headline, drinking your own urine. The unorthodox Chinese, quote, miracle cure. The Chinese Urine Therapy Association claims that drinking urine can improve the body's ability to fight diseases.
What I've heard is that you can't just drink any old urine. It's got to be the first, piss of the morning. So you need that thick, meaty, you know, orange, dark orange pee. Mm. And then you just drink the first 10 seconds.
This
you
is,
just
you
drink
know what,
the
Max,
top.
This is,
that's where all the nutrients. That's where all the nutrients are.
Okay, it's like the cream. Mm-hmm. Yes,
well,
I think
the,
this has
the,
to be true because I
crema,
heard the same.
The crema,
the crema. I heard the same thing, so this must be true. I heard that it's got to be your hot morning urine that you've just produced, and you drink it right there. Now, do you brush your teeth before or after? Because you know, like with orange juice, you don't want to drink orange juice after you've brushed your teeth.
Yeah, you got to drink the piss first. Well, or it could be a gargle situation. No, because then you're wasting
it
the piss.
Be a gargle?
No.
You swallow.
You piss. You wake. Here's the order of operations. You wake up. You piss. You drink the piss, and then you brush your teeth.
Okay. The other way you could do it is you get up. You put your watch on the charge stand. You greet your family. Okay. You go into the bathroom.
You got to set a timer for an hour.
Right. You watch a video of somebody destroying your stamp collection by stomping on them.
You go on Twitter and see which cabinet officials have resigned.
Fucking moron.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for our first annual Jizz-a-ween, and you know, stay safe out there. So this was a story that I fell in love with from the New Zealand Herald. an 8-year-old boy was left honking with every breath after swallowing a party hooter. First of all, party hooter?
Party hooter.
Doctors had to operate to remove the whistle from the boy's throat, with doctors sharing footage of him online to show parents the danger of the popular party toy. And you may be wondering, did they provide the video? Can you hear the boy breathing and then the party hooter going? Mm-hmm. And I have good news for everyone, which is they absolutely did that. And Here it is.
Oh, God. Just for medical reasons, for public health reasons, they put it.
He looks so guilty. He looks like a dog that like ate the whole bag of kibble. Like he's like looking up at the camera, just like taking these deep breaths.
God, this video is worse. The punishment of this video is worse than surgery. Like you could see it in his eyes of like, this is gonna, I'm Star Wars kid now. It's so bad.
Oh God. The squeaker is so small. Look at that. I'd eat that. Mm-hmm. If I was just sitting digging my hands into some various corns, I could very easily eat a squeaker and just not know it. Sorry, Party Hooter.
That was my name in college, Party Hooter.
Party Hooter? Hey, look out, you guys. Here comes Party Hooter. I don't know why I feel the need to
party,
have helicopters
Party Hooter
everywhere.
Is what I would be after I had, after I would smoke, I would have one hit of pot, and then for the rest of the night, I'd be like...
My mom put me up here when my squeaker broke.
Well, I feel like we should get into the challenge because there's a lot going on this week.
So much.
There's a lot of levels.
A lot
to the
of
challenge.
Levels. So, you know, a couple of things.
Max, how do people find out what the challenge is going to be before it happens?
Great question, Roland. I'm so glad you asked. So, as you know, Do By Friday has launched a Patreon. You can become an official member of the Do By Friday Powder Nation. If you go to patreon.com/DoByFriday, you may be asking, well, why would I do that? Why would I give Do By Friday $5? Well, the answer is you get a RSS subscription to our secret after show, where we basically stick around for about a half hour after the podcast, and we do another podcast that's even better. I mean, honestly, this podcast is like a flute full of jizz. It's really...
Oh, this is
it's
just
really,
warming up.
It's very salty going down. But...
This is like watching somebody come into a flute. Yeah. Like you actually get to go jizz into the recorder.
You know what we're doing is
us.
We have a reverse morning piss, where the first it's like all the nutrients those first half cup, that's in the half hour in the after show that you have to pay $5 for. And then the rest of it, where it's sort of, you know, diluted, that's what you're listening to right now.
You're saying this is like a prequel, really?
It's the prequel. The real show is the one you have to pay $5 for. But that's, anyway, in the $5 show that you can go to patreon.com/DoByFriday and sign up for, that's where we discuss the upcoming week's challenge, and we invite the members of the Powder Nation, well, let's say the official members of the Powder Nation, to do the challenge alongside us and give us their feedback. So this week was my challenge, and this was a real doozy of a challenge. We heard about this from friend of the show, Christy. Christy shared a Reddit post from /r/sous-vide. And the post is from Antares 07923, and they write, "So I noticed there was a stank coming off my shoes after I wore my regular socks and the gym shoes because I forgot my gym socks. So my regular shoes started to stink up. I tried everything from balls," which Merlin helpfully explained were the like sort of cedar balls that allegedly get the smell out of your shoes, "to wiping them down with antibacterial substances and tea tree oil. I even froze them overnight, but eventually the smell came back. The bacterial colonies were pretty entrenched, so I realized I would probably have to go with prolonged heat, but the oven was too hot. Gee, if only there was some instrument that precisely controlled the temperature for prolonged periods of time. So I put newspaper in my shoes, lightly vacuum sealed them." Do it lightly, otherwise your shoes will deform and mold that way under the heat. I have much more to say about that in a minute. "And I sous-vided them at like 180 for a day. Viola, no more smelly." So that was the challenge this week, was sous-vide your shoes. Merlin, did you sous-vide your shoes?
Shit, dog. I did. Well, I've got, just in terms of methodology, I did. Here's my methodology. I don't have anything that stinks because I do laundry.
Have a pair of shoes that smell bad?
No, you have those Toms. I don't, you know, when I wear Crocs, you know, they're antimicrobial by nature, the Croc. it's not rubber. It's an antimicrobial material. So what I did was I found, I keep shoe trees in my shoes.
It's got silver fibers in it.
Rejoice. And then, so what I did was I took my favorite pair of disgusting jeans that my family keeps trying to throw away. I have what's called a food saver. And the food saver is an $80 dingus that you buy for sealing these plastic bags, these bespoke plastic bags or rolls of bags. So what you want to do is, in my case, and for if you're doing sous vide, you can do it with Ziploc, but it's so much more fun to do it with the food saver. So what I did was I took a pair of jeans, I took my sports ball shirt, and I took my some Keen old man walking shoes. I sealed the shoes up in separate bags. I sealed up, and we'll get to the methodology here, but the pants did the shirt. For the shoes, I put my fancy cedar shoe trees into them because in an initial attempt to try and do this, I couldn't get enough weight to like push them down into the sous vide device. So that's my basic methodology. And so I did 160. I think we talked about trying different temperatures. I did 160 for about 16 hours.
Alex, did you sous vide your shoes?
I sous vide something. like Merlin,
go on.
I don't have, like, when shoes get bad, I throw them away. I don't have any, like, super fancy shoes except for those, you know, Clark Desert boots, and those I just get, like, cleaned every year because those are my only fancy shoes.
Wait, how do you get a pair of Clark Desert boots cleaned?
You go to a haberdashery or a, like...
hat store?
Yeah. No, that's just, like, the
or a
fancy...
You could go to a shoe-ba-doober.
Yeah, yeah.
You could go, yeah.
You just go to a fancy shoe place, and they replace
a cobbler?
The laces. Maybe. Yeah, there's a.
You have a cobbler?
A bunch of.
Is it a glazier? Is that what you use?
I walk in and bunch
this
of little
is like
elves
such a
with
Dwight.
Cookies.
This is an extremely Dwight Schrute thing. You're like.
No, it's.
Where
oh my
Jim's
God.
Like, Dwight, so your apiarist, he's pretty good? And he's like, yes, Jim. Like, I would work with a bad apiarist.
They just make the like they like fix up the suede, so it's still nice. Okay.
Can you refer me to your cobbler? Do you need a referral?
The cobbler referral.
Do they take Blue Cross Blue Shield?
All right.
Would they receive my fortunate son?
What's the relationship? Could you go to the cobbler and say, listen, I got a little spilled, a little fortunate son.
I know this sounds
unexpected coming from me, but I spilled a little fortunate son on the Clark Desert boots.
Mm. Yeah, and now I've ruined the nap. I've ruined the nap with my blessing. I fluted on my shoe. Oh, who among us has not fluted on a shoe?
Okay.
Sometimes you get a little too excited. The kids get you think you're gonna make it. You think you're gonna make it to the end of hot cross buns.
Doing your morning,
and then you're not halfway through all over your Clark Desert.
Doing your morning benediction and playing your flute, and then some lady in high heels stamps on your stamp collection.
Mary Giseline, everybody.
Oh, that was the end of the river, all right. So what did you what'd you sous vide, Alex? You didn't do your Clarks because you.
No,
yeah.
I don't have any shoes that are particularly gross. I have a lot of gross bras, like most women do.
Oh, right, because of boobs.
Yeah,
right,
nasty. They get old and rugged. And there's this. I knew that this wasn't gonna go great. Max offered to give me his borrow a fancy sous vide thing. But he was switching assistants and things were stressful. And I'm like, wait, no. I just don't want to have this say. I don't want to just replicate everyone else's situation.
Is this photo an accurate depiction of what you did?
which photo?
Is this right?
To?
Oh God, this is the saddest thing I've ever
seen.
All right,
seen. So in our
you got a little pot and a plastic grocery bag.
This looks like how a hobo would do laundry or something. It's like it's like
making soup out of your laundry.
Okay.
It's like a stone soup
laundry
situation.
Soup.
It's like the villagers had nothing to eat.
But there's not even a stone. It's just a discarded grocery bag and two
soups. So Alex has got like an Aldi bag with a bra in it, and it's sitting in a metal pot on a burner. And then on top, I assume to hold it down,
yes,
there's just
yes.
like a bunch of measuring spoons and ladles and stuff, just like clattering in on top of it.
Why are you hating?
It looks like you're punishing.
You
it looks like
luck.
You're punishing
Alex,
something
it looks
you
like
found
you're
on
dissolving
the street.
A body in your kitchen. This is very Breaking Bad.
Man, my partner came home and came in the kitchen and was like, "Do you buy Friday?" And I'm like, yep. And she walked out. Anyway, I've sent in our super secret text channel the method I use, which is Martha Stewart's "How to Sous Vide Without the Fancy Machine."
Oh,
and the answer to that is Ziploc bags, a basic thermometer, and
these are not Ziploc bags.
Well, okay.
You use grocery bags.
This is here was the problem with the Ziploc bags I used initially. You could tell that I was getting some bubbles. My first bra, it did not go well. The water seeped in. It morphed into
a strange
shape.
No, a bra can get wet.
It can. It can't be heated to 150 degrees for 3 hours. Mm. That's not great for it.
See, there's the problem, is the degrees.
Yeah, that was the
too many degrees.
So then I was like, all right, I've ruined one fancy nice bra. So then I did a second attempt just for science and used a shittier bra, basically. And the thing I did with the plastic bags, I had I borrowed one of those what is it, like a little vacuum, reverse vacuum thing from my neighbor.
Reverse vacuum thing.
So it sucked.
I think it's a party hooter.
I ran out of Ziploc bags. So
oh God, Alex. This is a travesty.
No. So one of those are actually two. There's
if we keep doing this podcast, eventually you're going to be standing outside your house talking to a fireman about like why your house burned down. You're going to be like, "Well, anyway, then I ran out of electrical cords, so I fashioned my own out of a wire hanger."
I had to try autoerotic asphyxiation, but all I had was a grocery bag. It seemed
challenge,
like a natural
be an
fit.
Astronaut.
Come in a bag. How do you come in space?
I don't know.
Anyway.
If I can, you know what? I'm going to send this picture to you, Merlin. I don't know how HR would feel if I sent a picture of a deformed bra to Max. All right.
Oh, nice.
Hold on. So this is my second attempt.
Are you modeling it or
no,
is it in situ?
Good Lord. No.
I don't know if I can handle that, Alex.
No. Jesus Christ. No.
Should I send you something equally intimate of mine?
Sure. This is.
No.
This isn't for you, Max. But this is my
Okay.
But and so you see how like
there's that moment where you're waiting for a text to come in. You're just
there's a lot of
gonna come up in discovery someday.
I just want to clarify a couple quick things from your text message. You tried to cook a brassiere inside of a grocery bag.
And Mr. Temkin, could you tell the court how did it feel when your employee sent you a picture of her cooking her bra?
I sent them to my friend Merlin. Man.
Oh no, your bra.
Oh no, my bra.
No, it's okay. This was an ugly, bad one. But if anybody should, in the after show, I'm going to share my bra size. If anyone wants to send me some new,
How much would people have to Patreon for you to send this to?
You know what?
Along with a picture of you pissing on their stamp collection.
$50, because that's how much
$50,
one
that's a good deal.
But you
know, man, really?
Like, you see how at the bottom of one of the cups, it looks as if, like, I've worn it a bunch, and it's, like, been worn down? That is not the case with this bra, because I didn't like it. It's blue. It's bad.
So it lost its structural integrity? Is this an underwire,
The
right?
underwire is completely melted, but it also kind of melted the foam within it, like the little, you know, like the padding, so your nipples don't show.
I think they call them biscuits.
And it just and normally like when you're washing a bra that has underwire and there's like traditional cups to it, like what you do is you twist them so that like the cups sort of fold in on one another so it retains its shape, which is what I did with my sous vide cooking method. I shouldn't have used a human thermometer in the water. That was probably one of the downfalls. But it looks as it just like completely morphed it into this monstrosity. So I'm gonna go home tonight and see if it, like the other bra, has retained its monstrosity. Oh, God, my boogers are coming out of my throat.
I'm so sorry. Alex, take a bra out of Petty Cash. You deserve it. This is terrible. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were going to be damaged in this way. You didn't try it on, right? It's too disfigured.
Real-time follow-up. You know how you guys had talked about putting things in the freezer? I put another bra in the freezer and thought, I don't know. I just wanted to know what would happen. And
You're a curious young person. There's no reason you wouldn't freeze your underwear.
Well, that's a story for another time in the after show. But like it came out and it was fresh. The smell had got, like, it wasn't like a smelly bra, but you know how, like, you know, you're just done with clothes and they don't smell like fresh. But this came out like smelling like the kind of like the chemicals as if it had never been washed before. Like I had just
Okay, save that, cuz I got a fuck ton to say. Max, tell us about what you sous vide-ed.
I mean, listen, I followed the instructions. I took my pair of Toms that smell horrible, and they smell like Parmesan cheese, and I put them in a Ziploc, and I sucked all the air out, and, I packed them with newspaper, I put them in the Ziploc, sucked all the air out, put them in the sous vide at 180, and I sort of had to wait, I did like a cereal bowl filled with water and sort of put it on top, and that was enough to sort of force them down into the water, but, man... First of all, water got into both bags because I think this never happens when I do food, but I think the issue is that there was so much air in the bags because of the newspaper and the shoes and all of that, that it was like battling, like, I don't know, something weird happened and water got into both shoes. I took them out. They both smelled worse than when I started, and they were wet and ruined, and they had like soggy, smelly newspaper inside that was really disgusting.
This mirrors my results, which
My final thing I'll say is the shoes got kind of hard and cooked the wrinkles into the shoes.
That's what happened. That's what happened with the bra.
And then one of them is like way smaller than the other now.
Oh no!
So I'll just go buy a new pair of Toms. But I guess I would need to do that anyway because they smelled like Parmesan cheese.
I only did it at a low temperature for 16 hours. I took them out this morning. I dropped my kid off. I came home. I took my pants out of the water. And I had professionally sealed mine. Now, you understand, when I did my shoes, I took your counsel on this and used the shoe trees to make sure it maintained their structural integrity. Okay, so what I started out with was a shirt that I'd worn a couple times that didn't smell too bad, a pair of shoes that smelled mostly like cedar, and a pair of pants that smelled like pants. This morning, what I got out of those bags was hot, moist items that smell 10 times more what they originally smelled like, but now a little bit moist. They smelled more like what they were. It did the opposite. This is an accelerator. This makes it smell more like whatever that thing is.
I mean, I think we just basically put moldy things into a vat of something that grows more mold.
Well, here's my question about that. I know that I feel like there could possibly be some science involved in this whole discussion. It sounds very, very scientific. Marlon, do we know anyone who might have some expertise on this subject who would be able to tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, as it happens, Max, I have a very good friend, my good friend Dr. Donald Schaffner, who is a professor at Rutgers University, where he's a microbiologist specializing in food safety. He's a good friend of all the great shows. And we're going to give Dr. Don a call and see if he can tell us what went wrong with trying to sous vide our shoes.
Sous vide your shoes.
Sous vide your shoes.
Hey, this is Don. Sorry, I got my times confused. I was thinking 2:00 Eastern. I have a shitty microphone. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Don. Yeah, you sound really good.
Oh, well, that's so good.
Thank you so much for joining us on Do By Friday. This is really exciting. We usually just sort of wildly speculate about these things and sort of make proclamations, and it's a big change to our format to have someone who knows what they're talking about.
Oh, well, I'm a huge fan, guys. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. The podcast that you do, I almost can't believe that it exists, and I became aware of it when Merlin was on as a special guest, and it's really fun. I mean, it's like it's almost exactly what I hope to find in a podcast, which is like a sort of obscure specialist topic, but you guys use it as a way to talk about all kinds of interesting things and make it very accessible to people.
Oh, well, thank you, Max. That's fantastic.
Say the name of the podcast. Let's promote it.
Yeah, where can people subscribe? What's the name?
Foodsafetytalk.com.
All right. So the challenge this week on Do By Friday, I don't know how much Merlin has told you, but a friend of the show, Christy, sent in a Reddit post from a guy who sous-vided his shoes as a sort of a harebrained scheme to try and get his shoes to stop smelling. We all attempted this challenge, and it was mostly, I would describe it as a wet disaster. And for me, my shoes smelled worse than when I began. They smelled more like Parmesan cheese than when I began. I'll say they smelled like a more expensive Parmesan cheese than when I began.
And I melted to underwear bras.
Nice.
Yep.
Can you tell us, so I guess the theory that this guy was, to the extent that there was any sort of scientific theory underlying this idea, it was that there was some sort of, you know, bacterial colony in the shoes, and that the same way that you can sous vide a steak to sort of kill the harmful bacteria, you could sous vide your shoes at a low temperature over a long period of time, and it would kill the bacteria in the shoes. Can you kind of help us Mythbusters this?
Well, you know, in principle, this is right? Because heat kills bacteria, right? We know that from sous vide. But the key, this is what I discussed with Merlin via email, the key difference is that when you're sous viding a piece of meat, essentially you are providing what is called wet heat, right? So in other words, that piece of meat is moist. And we know from, you know, decades and decades of research that wet heat is way more effective than dry heat. And so essentially when you're taking an underwire bra or a shoe and you're putting it inside a plastic bag, unless you have water in that bag with those things, that's what we call dry heat, or it's certainly not fully moist heat. And so because it's dry, we know that when bacteria are or molds or whatever, when they're under dry conditions, it's a lot harder to kill them with heat, which is why we had a problem so many years ago with salmonella in peanuts, right? Because the peanuts are a low moisture food, and so really hard to kill the bacteria on the peanuts.
And that's because there's not, because the moisture is like conducts the heat basically to where the bacteria are. Is that right?
Well, it has to do with the latent heat of vaporization, which is a chemical term, which I'm sure Virginia could probably explain that to you. But basically it has to do with that moisture in the air potentiating, making that heat much more effective. You can think about it like, you know, that thing that people always say, it's not the heat, it's the humidity, right?
This is fascinating. So basically the actual results that we got, which is that it did not make our shoes stop smelling, you probably could have predicted this had we asked you.
That would have been my guess, yes.
Well, let me do a follow-up on this, Dr. Don. Is there anything that we should sous vide that's not food that might produce an interesting result? As a microbiologist, what do you recommend as something we could put in hot water for 16 to 24 hours and make some kind of a chemical, physical change? What should we be sous viding that we're not?
I think that we should sous vide food, Merlin. I'm sorry. I can't think of anything else.
You wouldn't do pennies or sporks or children's squeaky toys, nothing like that?
What if you got a flute with some sort of contaminant in it? Would you be able to sous vide the flute to sanitize it?
Let's just for the sake of argument, someone in Southern California came on a flute. Is that the kind of thing that you would want to sous vide? Would that improve the performance characteristics of a flute or a recorder or other wind instrument?
Well, one of the things that we say in food safety, Merlin, is you can sanitize a dirty surface. So if there was, let's say, some contamination on a flute, I would start by cleaning it with warm, soapy water. And then maybe after that, put the flute in a bag with some water and then sous vide that bag. Or heck, you know.
it's semen flutes all the way down. Oh, God, this is so useful. I think we should make you a correspondent on the show, Dr. Don. This is so useful to me.
I have a little rare Dubai Friday real-time follow-up that I bet Dr. Don will enjoy. So do you remember, this is a deep cut, but do you remember when we first started talking about kombucha? We were looking at the ingredients of the kombucha, and they listed one of the ingredients as love. And I said, I wonder if the Food and Drug Administration takes issue with the kombucha company listing drug as an ingredient, love as an ingredient on the beverage as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a little real-time follow-up from the Washington Post. This just posted. This is from Travis Andrews in the Washington Post. FDA rebukes bakery for claiming love as an ingredient in granola. The ingredient list for Massachusetts-based Nashua Brook Bakery's granola was normal enough, save for one ingredient. Amid the oats and sweetener was, quote, love. The subject of nearly every rock and roll song, the thing Romeo and Juliet died for. All right, we get it. I get it. This is a lot of news writing where they're trying to make their story longer. Was supposedly in the granola, which was sold at around 120 stores around New England. The, quote, ingredient was a nod to the passion bakers put into their product and a wink to the fans of the snack. as the and then let's see. But the Food and Drug Administration didn't see it that way. A human emotion, it said, cannot be an ingredient in baked goods. The FDA published a warning letter to the bakery on Tuesday, which told the bakery to stop claiming that its granola contains love. Quote, your Nashaba granola label lists ingredient love. Ingredients required to be declared on the label or labeling of food must be listed only by their common or usual name. Love is not a common or usual name of an ingredient and is considered to be an intervening material because it is not part of the common or usual name of the ingredient.
Oh, this is. I hope the FTC comes down fucking hard on Subaru, because I am here to tell you that love is not what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Calling it a Subaru is what makes it a Subaru. Let's end this. Let's bring these jackals down. This is disgusting. They're contaminating our food, much like a music teacher might contaminate a flute.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if I have any other topics. Okay, here's another one that I. Can I just ask you a random food safety life hack question, Dr. Don?
Sure, absolutely.
So I saw this story going around over the weekend, and it's kind of I don't know. I can't tell if it's kind of like Snopesy or if it's a true story or whatever. But it was like one of these things that was like, did you know that your kitchen sponge is like dirtier than your entire bathroom?
Yeah, Jesus, don't get me started. So,
I'd love to get you started, because I got a hard on for sponges, buddy. They do not have a long shelf life. And then maybe you got a life mate whom you love very much that just leaves it in the sink like an animal instead of squeezing it out.
Are you talking about me, Merlin?
Well, you know, you've had my back for a long time, Dr. Don, and I'm super grateful. You stood up for me that day that the slides didn't work, and I don't even want to get into it. But like, shouldn't we be changing our sponges much more often than we do? Am I a nut about this?
Well, yeah, yes, for certainly. If your sponge stinks, change your sponge. Ugh. What we do in my household is we demote them from sponges that are allowed to contact dishes to sponges that are used on counters and then. But this most recent news hubbub about sponges really has me steamed, because this is some research from some people that did some really fancy molecular biology and gene sequencing and bullshit. But if you dig into the paper, you know how many sponges they studied? They studied 14 fucking sponges.
What? Holy shit. That's hardly any sponges at all. I would go through that many in a day if I could. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's how much are in my cabinet right now.
Merlin uses sponges like paper towels. You open up a new one from the plastic every time you clean a dish.
I'll give you a life hack. If you do what Dr. Don does in his household, make sure you take a big Sharpie and make an X on it. And that is your way of saying never let this touch the food surface again, because it's been used to clean the bottoms of things.
So what about, let me ask you a couple of questions. What about microwaving a sponge?
Oh, yeah.
Does that do it?
Yeah, so two comments, okay? First of all, if you have an automatic dishwashing machine, my advice is put the sponge in that machine, because that gets the water gets really hot, works really well. You can also microwave sponges, but here's the thing. Don't microwave dry sponges, because they can catch on fire. So put a little bit of water in your sponge and microwave it. That works, but that's a little bit less precise.
Dr. Don, that's what you'd call a wet heat.
Yes, exactly, Max. You got it.
I'm wondering also about like a pop culture thing. How do I clean my phone, Dr. Don?
Oh gosh, Alex. I don't know. You could lick it clean.
That sounds like something I would do. Yeah.
I cleaned my phone just earlier today. I wiped it on my dirty blue jeans.
Daily thing. Yep. Oh.
I'm not super concerned about phones and how you clean them, even if you use them while you're, let's say, theoretically on the toilet. It's not high on my list of things to worry
about. Really? Dr. Don, I heard that it's dirtier than a toilet, I read on the internet.
Well, it depends on the toilet. It depends on the...
That's such a good point. Whether you've been rubbing sponges on it or collecting your morning urine to drink or making a flute. That's a really good point. We shouldn't keep Dr. Don for too long. We could certainly have him back, I think.
This was fascinating. Thank you so much for talking to us about sous vide-ing our shoes, and maybe next time we'll save ourselves the incredible mess in our kitchen and ruining a good number of shoes
and bras.
And we'll just ask you first.
It's my pleasure, guys. Happy to talk with you anytime.
Thanks, Dr. Don.
Thank you. Merry Jizzoween.
Bye bye.
That was delightful.
Holy shit, that was great.
You were holding out on us, Merlin. We could have asked him and he had information.
There's so much stuff I just guess about.
I have a question. Did you ruin your shoes? Was there any damage to your shoes? I mean, granted, it didn't really work.
Right.
But.
Well, I mean, the part, I'm not sure if I'm portraying this well. I mean, this food saver, okay, one thing in terms of the sample size, and I'm not talking about sponges here, but like when you think about like, oh, I've never gotten water in the bag before. Like I could see getting water in the bag with the Ziploc, but I'm pretty good at doing the food saver and I don't generally get incursion. With that said, I mean, I wonder, Yeah, anyway, my shoes are kind of fucked up. I think they'll dry out. They're sitting out with the shoe trees. I took my pants outside because they are a holocaust of pants right now. They are real super duper nasty. It just made it smell worse. But no, my shoes are not ruined. And by virtue of the fact I put my costly cedar shoe trees in, I think it maintains some structural integrity. When I get home, I will probably take them out and do the opposite of this, which is when I take a metric shit ton of silica packets. You stuff newspaper into your shoes, silica packets, and then you get a hygrometer so you can tell what the humidity is, the relative humidity. You put that in a 2-gallon Ziploc bag, you leave it overnight. That's what I'm going to do with the shoes because then I need to draw out some of the fluid. Are yours wrecked? You're just done, right?
Yeah, I'm going to toss them. I've sort of like left them out to dry, but they it's like they have the consistency of like an old tire, like they're kind of brittle. Like it's just
man, we
they lost all their flesh.
We left nothing on the tarp this week, you guys. I think we really did it. I mean, we got out there and took the flute for you. You know, you don't need to do this. And so sorry if you did the challenge. Oh, by the way.
I mean, that's just the kind of risk. Listen, Merlin, the people who do, the people who go to DubaiFriday.com or Patreon.com/DubaiFriday, listen, they're risk takers. They're thrill seekers. They're adventurous. They're out there on they're on the frontier.
They're
out there trying new
powders and learning new woodwinds. They're out there every day on the edge of society saying, give it to me. Give me your worst. You're just strafing.
If you're the kind of person who hears something on a podcast, you know, like a mattress ad or like some sort of subscription food thing, and you have no critical faculties, and you're just like, I heard about it on a podcast, I should absolutely do it with no further hesitation. Absolutely subscribe at patreon.com/DubaiFriday and do anything we tell you, and eventually we will need you to kill for us.